Well, at any rate, it's going to be popping off here soon. Got two exhibitions in October, and then it'll be game time. So Penny is obviously getting ready for that, and the October 4th will be the court date for Sincere. That will probably go a long way in shoring everything up. But yeah, it'll be here before you know it. We'll come back. Got Jason Fitz, 125. We'll talk college football with him, get his thoughts on Memphis, a little NFL. What are the chances of game day coming back to Memphis in October? We'll get into all that with him at 125. Jason and John, I turn to FM, ESPN.
Turn on the lights and reach out to the Live Love Group if you are looking for a new home. You want to sell yours, make the most money for it. It's all the same. You need a good team that's accessible, that knows the market. And that's exactly what the Live Love Group does every single day. But in order to take advantage, you got to reach out and have that conversation. Jennifer and her team are ready for you, ready to help you. Sold at LiveLoveMemphis.com.
901-625-5200 is the number you should lock in your phones. So whether it's now or whether it's later, you'll be with the right folks when it comes to selling that home and getting it priced from the get-go. She's not going to tell you she can get something for it that she can't. That helps, especially in this market where you see homes. They've been out there for a long time for sale. So pricing, critically important, and Jennifer is the expert when it comes to that. And she's the expert on the other side as well. Can help you find your dream home, put you in a situation that's got your family much better off than it was. That's certainly the case for me back in 2018. So I speak from personal experience. Jennifer's family, it's because she's done so much for us. She can do a lot for you. 625-5200. It's the Live Love Memphis, Live Love DeSoto, and Live Love Nash group at the real estate agency.
NFL news, Lamar Jackson is unlikely to play this weekend against the Houston Texans. They have gone from 3.5-point favorites to 2.5-point underdogs, have the Baltimore Ravens. And the expectation, according to Brian Wacker of the Baltimore Sun, is that he will miss 2 to 3 weeks. Again, hamstring, tricky, especially for somebody like him who depends on mobility. Man.
They better be careful and hope that that's enough. Maybe, to me, that's a sign that they must not think this is very major, because you don't mess with hamstrings because of the re-popping of those things, the re-pulling of them.
Yes.
That can happen if you come back too quickly. So my guess is this must just be a tweak if you're only talking about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess maybe you start with that and hope that he can get out there and, you know, run around in 2 to 3 weeks.
He needs his wheels.
Yes.
And messing with a hamstring, you're messing with one of the spokes, man. That wheel ain't going to turn. And yep. So it tells me that this is, if you're only thinking 2 weeks, it tells me they think this isn't very serious.
Yeah. Well, the bigger problem is really the defense. I mean, even if Lamar is out there, which he has been, gave up 40 against the Buffalo Bills. How many did they give up against the Lions? 38 against the Lions. 37 against the Chiefs. I mean, they're just beyond bad defensively, and they're even more injured defensively than they are offensively. And so you can bring Lamar back all you want. I mean, unless you address that defense, it ain't going to matter. And so I think that's the bigger problem for the Ravens. They got to figure out how to fix whatever they can. I mean, they do get kind of the antidote, I'll say, this weekend in the Houston Texans unit.
I was going to say, that schedule lightens up. It's been pretty heavy to start the year.
They've got Texans this weekend. Then they get the Rams. That's going to be a tough one. Your Bears, Dolphins.
We're one of the worst defenses in the league.
Right. Vikings on the road. Browns on the road. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say their season is lost yet, but
no.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them. Again, my bigger concerns with the Ravens are just defensively. Like, I don't. Matt Ebuke's out for the year. He's a two-time Pro Bowler.
Did Roquan get hurt the other day?
Roquan's out. Marlon Humphrey is out. I mean, they're ravaged defensively already. So, you know, I mean, if Lamar's back, they can at least compete and try to outscore teams.
Yeah, which they can do.
Yeah.
If he's okay.
Yeah. But that's a hard way to live, man. That's what Cincinnati had to do all year last year with Burrow, and they couldn't do it. And he had an MVP caliber season. Kind of feels like that's the way the Ravens are going to have to play. So they still do have two games against the Bengals. That helps. I mean, that gets you to 3 wins right there. Browns should get you to 4. Dolphins and Bears, 5-6. You know, I mean, can you scrounge your way to 9 wins? It's gonna be tough.
Again, I mean, They've still got. They haven't played Pittsburgh either, right? Yes, they'll have two with Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
I'm not sold on Pittsburgh, although their defense is coming back to form.
Yeah.
After being horrendous early on, but I'm not sold on them. And any, you know, Aaron could go down at any moment.
Yeah.
And so that's that whole division. They can still come back and at the very least split with Pittsburgh. I think I still feel good about
right.
that. So outscoring them one week, because that's what it would be with this defense as ravaged, like you said, as it is. But no, I still think they're fine in terms of the schedule that they've got. They caught tough break.
Yep.
You know, the three that they had, those three teams that you mentioned.
Yep.
KC having to get right.
That's very true.
Detroit, which is clearly not taking a step down. And then you mentioned the Bills off top.
Yep.
And that's a tough start. And for that defense period, I don't think it ultimately gets fixed, that becomes a dominant defense again, but I'm where you're at.
Yeah.
Lamar can outscore some folks. So as long as they get back in the playoffs, you know, they'll be a threat.
No, I mean, honestly, you're right. I mean, it's kind of as bad a draw as you could have schedule-wise to start your year on top of all the other
100%.
Stuff happening. Because, I mean, the Bills are looking like a Super Bowl contender. Right,
yeah.
The Lions are better than we thought they'd be.
Yeah, we wrote them off too soon.
And you're in a desperation spot on the road at Arrowhead against the Chiefs.
And they were getting guys back, to your point.
And
Xavier was one. And
they got Worthy back. And then it's like, dude, it's the freaking Chiefs in a must-win game at Arrowhead.
Right.
I mean, come on. So I do sympathize with the schedule, you know. They should have won the Bills game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they were 99.9%. You know, favorite to win that game.
Yep,
they were up 21-14 on the Lions before, you know, some the Derrick Henry fumble mm-hmm. and things like that. So, you know, there are definitely some points that I would make, like towards, hey, this doesn't have to be a lost season just yet. But you know, if that's closer to 3 weeks for Lamar,
oh yeah, then you start getting some dangerous territory.
Yeah, I mean, can you survive maybe this weekend against the Texans? It would not be the crazy thing in the world, because the Texans are bad. Their offensive line is bad. They just traded away their left tackle. So,
but a division that we once looked to as one of the strongest divisions in football, there were years where we said it was, now could be their saving grace. Because, again, look at Cincinnati last night. Cleveland has no offense. They've got a defense, sure, but you can outscore that Cleveland team. You can be saved in a way. And then Pittsburgh, again, has not proven. I know they beat Minnesota, which has looked better, and is, I suppose, you know, with Carson Wentz is a solid team, but they haven't proven anything yet. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh. So that's what I'm saying. An old AFC North that's now beat up pretty good.
Yeah,
could be the saving grace, the thing that gets them back.
Yeah, that's
different than the old days, bro. That ain't the same AFC North, is my point.
Well, you know, I kind of wonder, like, all right, now that the Ravens have flipped to a, you know, an underdog at home here, and like in sort of what feels like their season, right? Kind of intrigues me a little bit about them, you know. I mean, you still have Derrick Henry. I know Cooper Rush is a huge downgrade from Lamar Jackson, but he did fill in for the Cowboys a couple of weeks, right?
Admirably, it seemed like.
Yeah, I think he beat the Bengals or something like that with the Cowboys. I want to say he did.
Yeah, vaguely recall that.
But you know, it does change everything about the offense when it's not Lamar and his legs.
Oh, yeah.
But again, like, you know, it's kind of like the same logic with the Chiefs last weekend. You know, like if you can't start 1-4. I think the record of, you know, the starting 1-4 in the NFL is basically, you know, the end. Only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams in the last 30 years have started 1-4 and gone on to make the playoffs. So, I mean, this is it for them. And then, again, the Texans, what did the Texans have? I mean, they have an offensive line that's bad. They can't run the ball with Chubb or Woody Marks. You have one receiver in Collins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's easy enough to scheme against. He's a great player, but you'll – throw everything at him.
Right.
I'm just saying, I think there's a world where the Ravens can get this one done for Lamar.
Dude, he's a two-time MVP?
Two-time MVP, man.
So, what did you say, six teams have done it?
Six teams have
done it. They're in what's become a bad division?
Yep.
Clearly, there is still a path for them to get back at least to the top of the North,
mm-hmm.
and which gets you into the playoffs. And by that point, sure, their defense will probably keep them from being a true contender. That's where the Ravens won't, you know, that's the step back.
Yep.
But Lamar's going to, you know, have you in any game.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Yeah. It's just when you get him back is going to be the question there. So that's the news from the NFL that Lamar Jackson's going to miss 2 to 3 games here. Tyreek Hill is undergoing surgery as we speak, according to Mike McDaniel. I mean, it's just like a terrible injury. Multiple ligaments in his knee, ACL. And so you feel like this guy at what, you know, early 30s?
Yeah. He's up, I thought 31.
31.
Yeah, I think I saw. I was thinking about what I was going to say was that you saw him taken away and then a reemergence of Darren Waller.
Yeah.
Who caught his first touchdown passes since 2023 for the Dolphins in that game. Two of them, if I'm not mistaken. And no, he doesn't replace Tyreek. But a guy that we had written off, was it Kelsey Plum he was married to and then retired? Yes. And it was a really weird what he was going to do. He came back and he was a threat last night. That's not going to save the Dolphins. But it was interesting to see him reemerge. They needed it. They're going to need a ton of, you know, whether it's Waddle, whether it's Achane catching more passes, you take Tyreek out of that. And he was active in that game. Tua was looking for him as that first in the progression every time, it felt like. Now, that's a big loss for a team that's already reeling.
Yeah.
Mike McDaniel's probably gone. You know, finesse football is not going to work. Did you see Tua take that shot and get back up smiling? That was weird.
Yeah.
You talk about trying to put out a message that, hey, I'm okay. Tua got it. You know, he kind of went head first. He got hit, and he got back up smiling and laughing.
Yep.
No, anytime he does that, we're holding our breath. Because what we've seen, him seizing up and everything else, he was trying to just get it across. I don't know whether he's doing that for his team to make them, hey, I'm good or whatever else. It was kind of like the Tyreek thing in terms of reacting to the injury. Like Tua was laughing. He didn't get hurt. But I think he clearly wanted to show, oh, I can, you know, you guys don't have to worry about every time I do this. Dude, everybody that watches the NFL worries every time that you do that.
Yep.
Particularly when you go head first or something.
No, you're right.
I think he may have slid, but it was like a late hit towards the head. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. It was like the guy's hand hit him on the – it wasn't a helmet to helmet.
It was his fist hit him.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And he got up, man, and I just – anytime Tua runs, it just feels dangerous.
Well, no, like Dan Orlovsky was like, I thought, laying it on a little thick. I mean, I get what he was trying to say, but he was just like – he kept saying it. He was like, oh, thank God. Thank God Tua's okay. I mean, I'm just, oh, thank God.
Bro, this is a man who said he's willing to die out there,
dude. That is true.
Like, we had the conversation, should he stop? I mean, you and I did.
Yeah.
Concerned about this man's life.
Yeah.
And the quality of life after football. And he told us he don't care. He's a warrior. He will die out there for it.
I think that's a rough broadcast group, by the way. Fowler, Orlovsky, and Riddick. I was not a fan of it. They were all kind of talking over each other. Didn't sound great to me. And then on the other side, you got Troy Aikman complaining about penalties. He was bitching about that for like 5 minutes. He was like, you didn't have to throw that. I mean, was it the right call? Yes. But was it necessary? There's nothing that is worse for the broadcast than these yellow flags. That's what he was going on about, on and on and on and on. I'm like, come on, Troy, bro. Like, it's Monday Night Football. Let's get back to the game.
He's a staple.
He is.
And he gets moody.
He does.
Especially when he's got, you know, when he doesn't have a good game.
See, that's why, you know, y'all always come at my king, Al Michaels. You know, Al Michaels is the best. He's the best.
No.
You never hear him
You
complaining.
Said it the other day, the NBC team, Mike Tirico, what they got is the best. You said it. Did you not? Did you not say that's
the
standard?
Well, the production.
You said their production and presentation, which includes his great voice.
Put Al back on
his pipes.
Replace.
We don't need Al back on the games that matter.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to replace Mike Tirico. Tirico's great.
Thank you.
I would like Al.
We do Olympics, by the way.
Yeah,
something Al used to do. His time has passed. Why are you trying to give it back to him?
He's still getting a bag.
As the main guy. Of course he's getting like $10 million. Good for him.
Yeah.
That's good money when you're 80-something years old, especially.
I don't care how old you are. It's good money.
It is, but especially for him, as much as he's made, that he's still getting banked like that.
Hell yeah.
When you're not the number one guy anymore.
Who's his partner? Oh, Herb Street.
No, it gives him nothing.
That's bad. That's a bad one.
I will give Al credit for having to work with a college guy.
Carrying him.
And he's carrying him. His experience and everything else
that
he's seen.
Give him a real, color guy.
Kirk's got enough. Why do we have to give him everything?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm not
trying to take a dollar out of a man's pocket.
No, I
don't have to put Kirk on everything for it to call it a success.
Well, I think, honestly, you need to be one or the other. You either need to be a college football guy or an NFL guy. To me, it's very difficult to balance and juggle both.
Who else does both?
I don't think there's anybody. I mean, it'd be like, you know, you don't put Paul Feinbaum on the NFL broadcast. You know, you don't.
Well, he'd about to be off to college, isn't he?
That's right. He's pursuing a career in politics.
Will you be his campaign manager? I don't know how tight you guys are. White Station brothers as well.
I don't get into politics, man. I'm very much out of that game.
So he's running for Tuberville, though. So he seems smart. He's basically played the same part.
Yeah, he's going to split the Auburn and the Alabama vote, right? I mean, how do you unite both of those?
Split them and join them.
Maybe.
Paul can, because he gets them all on his show.
Well, that's the way it seems to work in that state. If you
now, how old is he? 70s? Do you think this is wise, him embarking on a political career at this point?
Would you advise?
Oh, okay. We have not discussed
this. He has his own motivations. But then that's for him to reconcile. But if I was him, would I do it? Absolutely not. I mean, I'm getting into it, and I don't really want to get into it. You know what I mean? Because it's like either I'm attacking him or I'm attacking like his reasoning, and it's really not my place to do that, right? Like, I don't understand it. I don't feel compelled. The only thing I ever felt compelled to do in terms of running for office was to run for the mayor of Germantown because we didn't have water.
They had gas in it.
That's right. Exactly. And it got addressed, and now I can, like, you know, I did my part. You know, I came on the radio. I threatened the mayor's tenure, and then it got fixed. And now I'm cool.
That's big, what you were doing, them showers. You're washing your underarms with that gasoline.
That was a joke. That was a mess of however long that was.
Couldn't light a match or anything. That was sad for Germantown.
It was a low moment.
It's not funny at all.
No, it was a low moment.
They poisoned your water with gasoline.
They poisoned the water.
And you had to bathe in it.
So ridiculous. But again, Paul,
you will never forgive Paolo Zola for that, will you?
Oh, no. It was a pretty devastating. And I only had one.
Brad stays out. He doesn't discuss that thing. I mean, he's Germantown too, right? The water would have been bad for Brad as well.
He's more diplomatic than I was, you know?
I think I was in the part of town that wasn't affected.
Oh, is that right?
I still had that pure.
Yeah, I guess it did end up being kind of fragmented by the end of it. Some places you could do, like,
Yeah, it was on certain parts.
One neighborhood at a time. Yeah, for sure. So it wasn't so much diplomacy as he was not affected.
Right.
I think that is a perfect snapshot of this country, right? If you're affected, you speak. If you're not affected, you're silent. You know? And what we need to do is we get to a place where even if you're not affected, you speak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the power of the people.
That's what we said about folks that harassed Jessica
Benson.
Brad
did not use it. Brad did not use the power of the people that week. It was up to me. And I was affected. Would I have used my voice if I was not affected? Likely not. I would have been much less passionate about it, I'll tell you that much. You know? I just got to call it like it is. Guardians and Tigers tied one apiece. How about a little two-out bunt to get a man from third home? You like that?
Yeah. You got to play that small ball.
Yeah, against school ball.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's still 1-1, Brad. You have it up there?
1-1.
1-1, fourth inning?
Fifth inning, bottom five.
Bottom five, we're just flying through a matinee, all right? We're flying through a baseball matinee. Only one person has a relevant team on this show. And that's Jason.
Jason Smith.
For now, we'll probably lose the Padres.
But we're gonna switch gears. We're gonna talk to Jason Fitz, and we're gonna see if we can get game day in Memphis on October 25th. Stick around, Jason and John. I'm trying to find ESPN. Jason Fitz is a host for Yahoo Sports, longtime friend of the show. It's been a minute, but he's here. Fitz, what's happening, my friend?
Man, I appreciate you guys letting me have a little time. I had to get Yahoo Sports Daily launched, which it now is every morning, 9 to 11 a.m., Monday through Friday. So life is good. Couldn't be better. I'm just back in the five-day-a-week grind that you guys know particularly well. It's just been a minute since it's funny because I was watching the TV show The Paper the other day, and they turned in the first episode of The Paper, and the guy's like, now we get to do this every day, again and again, for the rest of our lives. Like, that's five-day-a-week. You guys know it well from radio, but, like, that's what we're doing digitally, so... You know, take it. I gotta get my sea legs under me, but it feels good. It feels good.
Is that a good show, by the way? I know it's the sequel spiritually to The Office.
Yeah, actually, it's really well done. I mean, I'm only like halfway through, but like I really like it. It is obviously in the same vein of The Office, but it's not trying to be The Office. They do a really nice job.
All right, I'll check it out because I loved The Office. I mean, it was unbelievable, and nothing has come close since. So I will do my best to. To watch it, although it's difficult with all these kids and things going on. Anyway, all right, once upon a time, Fitz, you were at ESPN, and you were part of the traveling band at Game Day. And obviously that was a past life, and you're still doing great, and you're doing amazing. But I do just want to throw this at you because you're so, you know how these discussions go, and you know what goes into them. What do you believe the chances of Memphis hosting game day again would be if they get to October 25th against South Florida and both teams are undefeated?
I think if both teams are undefeated, you probably have a pretty good chance. So I'll tell you, I heard, that the rumblings this week was, for example, that they were all but sure they were headed to Florida State, you know, to take on Miami, Florida State this weekend. And then Florida State lost, and it was just such a jarring loss that coming off the Alabama win, like, momentum matters in these things. And, you know, as I've told you guys before, we genuinely didn't know until, you know, Saturday night, but we were looking at our phones just like everybody else was. Like, that's how hard the decisions are this year in college football, because it's spread out so many different places. They're going to be and will always be strategic about not trying not to visit the same places multiple times. So I think that's why, like, when you start to look at how does the rest of the best get in, I think the rest of the best gets in because they've already gone, like, they're going to Alabama this weekend, for example. Like, so once you check off Tuscaloosa, you don't want to go back there if you can avoid it. That's sort of, it's like process of elimination plus saving some weeks that they will have during rivalry week. I think there's a pretty good chance, especially because they need to start, if we're being honest, they got to start highlighting some of the group of five teams that are going to be in the college football playoff conversation, because they want people to pay attention when that actual playoff game happens.
Need you to educate us on the SEC, what feels like a wide-open SEC, Fitzy. I've asked the question, sort of been the theme today. Is Ole Miss the best team in the SEC? And if it's not Ole Miss, who is it for your money?
Well, I mean, it was supposed to be Georgia, right? Like, if you'd asked me on Friday, I'd have told you it was Georgia. And I thought Georgia was going to do enough to really confuse Simpson and Alabama, and Alabama just went out and, you know, they Alabama'd them. So I'm a little bit shaken from that. When you talk about complete games, yeah, Ole Miss went out and got one. See, this is where I think we have to start to acknowledge some of the personalities on the sidelines. Like, let's be honest. How much do you trust big game right down to the wire? How much do you actually trust Brian Kelly? And I just don't, right? So when LSU finds a way to lose to Ole Miss, I'm like, of course. Like, there's a bit of a gunslinger mentality to Ole Miss, and Lane Kiffin, if I'm being fair, his identity is he's going to blow a game he shouldn't blow somewhere. We all know that. But when it comes down to like competition, neutral field, trust a coach, I don't really trust Brian Kelly. I honestly don't really trust Kalen DeBoer. Like, I trust Kirby Smart, even coming off a loss, and I certainly trust Lane Kiffin in that situation. So I think that when you start to stack all of those things together, the biggest thing with the SEC is they are going to beat each other up, because I think all of them are really good and all of them have some fatal flaws that will bite them in the butt. So they're going to spend the next 2 months just sucker punching each other 1 week after the next.
If you are Lane Kiffin, I'm curious on where you are on him, Fitzy. We've had the discussion, you know, hey, Florida is going to come open possibly, and would you call a Lane Kiffin? But then more to the point, Lane, who I think is making between 8 and 9 now at Ole Miss, and has them what, number 4 in the country? I think the highest they've ever been is 3. So you're right there in terms of the height you've ever been. Is there a reason for Lane? Is that Florida job still a job that's better? Is that an upward trajectory for him, or is he, you know, if it came down to those two, is he better off just staying pat with what he's built at Ole Miss?
In the modern football climate, Florida is not better than Ole Miss in any way, shape, or form. And this is where, you know, we'll talk about the history. History doesn't matter anymore in college football. So take history. It matters to fans. But to kids that are coming into play, they don't care about the history. So throw that away. So then you say, okay, well, which place can be a better pipeline for the NFL? There's just literally no proof of concept that Florida is a better pipeline today than Ole Miss is, right? So then you're coming off the heat that he's getting now for having Jackson Dart already playing in the league, right?
Yeah.
So you factor all of this together, and then you factor in the fact that at the end of the day, it's Ole Miss. And I think one thing that's really beautiful about Ole Miss is that they love this run that they're in. If Ole Miss doesn't win a national championship, are they going to turn around and try and fire Lane Kiffin this year?
Nope.
No. But if Florida was in the exact same boat and they didn't win a natty, would there be people in that Florida fan base that want him fired? Yes. So I just don't think there's enough wins above replacement. Like, when you get to the point that you're making $9 million a year plus whatever he's making for his local stuff that he does there, the dude's probably taking in $11, $12 million a year. Like, what's the difference between 11, 12, and 14 or 15, even if Florida will pay you more? I think that you'd have to get to astronomical dollars to do it. So I think Lane's somewhere he's going to be for a really long time because it works for him and his family.
Do you think at this point, I mean, obviously, you know, if Memphis makes a playoff, his resume gets, you know, exponentially better. But just where do you think Ryan Sommerfeld has put himself in terms of, you know, another job? He's never really been involved in his time at Memphis with anybody else, it seems like. But it does feel like there's so many jobs that will come open. The carousel will be so busy that
it almost feels inevitable that that will change in terms of his involvement with jobs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my God, especially if they make the playoff. Even if they don't make a playoff, I think he's going to be a name people start paying attention to this year. So this is where we have to look at foundationally what a coach wants, because you all know my love of UNLV growing up, for example. I would make the argument that you have a better chance at the college football playoff at Memphis or UNLV than you do at Auburn most years. So if your goal is to make the college football playoff, you have way more control of your own destiny and a much easier path to go out and just shine. If you want to be, and this is not condescending in the way that people will say, but if you want to be sort of big fish in a little pond, you can do that group of five and you can make the college football playoff and you can be in a really good situation, right? So I think it's all about what feeds a coach's soul. Like one thing, you know, Vandy people have been asking me repeatedly, is Clark Lee going to leave Vandy? Is Clark Lee going to leave Vandy? I mean, Clark went to Vandy. He is Vandy. He loves Vandy. So it's part of the culture of who he is as a person. I think if you're that type of coach, then, you know, there's a real opportunity to just stay somewhere and be successful for a minute. I think what's going to be interesting to see is how much does money matter? Because realistically, you know, UNLV lost their last football coach to Purdue. So he went to what I think is a worse job, but he went somewhere where he was making he's making $6 million instead of making $2.5-3 million. So like that's a big difference for everybody. So money talks in these situations, but yeah, I think what happens inevitably for group of five is that the minute you get right on the cusp of the playoffs, people start paying attention. I just think we should pay attention to the fact that there are plenty of coaches that realize you can have better success. I'm not saying this lightly. You have a better shot at making the college football playoff every year if you are Memphis than you will if you are Wisconsin. And you are not going to get fired at Memphis the way you get fired at Wisconsin. So I think all of that is going to start to play into the mindset of college football coaches.
Which one were you more of, coming off of that Oregon win at Penn State in front of 111,000 or whatever it was, that whiteout? Was it more impressed by Dan Lanning or more disappointed, you know, by James Franklin? Which way did you come off?
It is impossible for me to be more impressed by Dan Lanning. I would, if you ask me right now what one college football coach I would bank on above any other,
you trust him.
It's Dan Lanning. I know that they lost last year. I know it was an undefeated season that they came away with nothing. They got a bad draw in the playoffs, and sometimes that happens. But, you know, I know one reporter at ESPN that sat down with Lanning this summer and said, you know, everybody's sleeping on this team. And he told me after he talked to him, he said, you know, Lanning just laughed and got this little smile and said, man, we're going to be good this year. And there's just a comp. Like, if you look at what Oregon has built, nobody's going to touch their facilities. Nobody's going to touch their cool factor that they have for kids that want to go there and want to play in different, you know, jerseys every game and want to have that sort of elite life that you can have if you're into that in Oregon, right? Like, yeah. I don't think anybody's going to touch the money across college football that Dan Lanning will make. I think that Oregon would pay him more than the NFL to stay there as long as they want. He has built a modern college football powerhouse. And I think Oregon is set to be what Alabama was for a generation. They're going to be right there every single year. So then you got to look over at the Penn State side and say, man, you had him. You had him on the ropes and you had him at home and you couldn't do anything with it. Like James Franklin, Josh Pate said this on his college football show, and I think it's probably accurate. James Franklin is the most appropriately ranked college football coach in the world, like, because people think he's okay, and that's what he is. Like, his team beats the teams they should beat. His team loses to the teams they should lose to, and they're always going to, like, this. Penn State's going to lose to Ohio State this year. They'll finish 10-2. They'll somehow make the college football playoff. Yeah. They'll beat up on whatever, you know, team they take in the first round that's not on their level. And then they'll play a real team in the second level, the second round, that's a very comparable team in talent and depth, and they will lose. And this is what will happen every stinking year. So if you're a Penn State fan and you can enjoy your Saturdays, boy, you're going to have a great year. But if you're a Penn State fan that has to win a national championship to have joy, man, start figuring out something else to do on your weekends, because Franklin ain't it.
Yeah, talking to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports, one of the best, friend of the show. Got to ask you, would be remiss if I didn't ask you, my excitement about Geno Smith and the Raiders and this new regime has been completely stamped out. He looks like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL, at least in terms of throwing the ball and getting it picked off. He is the worst in that regard. Offensive line's been bad. Gentry finally did have a breakout, but of course it came in an L. What do we make of this Pete Carroll tenure so far?
So far, I think the hardest part about it is it's been a different problem each week that is really been the issue. And so a week ago, as you know, everybody was screaming about the offensive line. But then last week, the offensive line played really well, but Geno's just out of rhythm. And you know, I put a lot of this on Chip Kelly's shoulders, honestly. Like, where are your 10 throw? Like, my quarterback's struggling right now. He's not seeing the field well. For anyone that didn't watch the game the last 2 weeks, there's been a drive opening interception by the other team on the first drive of the game. So what's that tell me? It tells me that they know what's being scripted. They know what's coming in. They're jumping the routes, right? So you've got Chip Kelly out here with the quarterback that's being jumped on his routes, that's throwing interceptions, that's not seeing the field well. Where are the 5 or 10 really easy throws just to get him some rhythm? Where are the quick little slants? Where are the quick little bubble screens? Where's the screen in general? Ashton Jeanty has yet to be thrown a screen this season at all. Like, how?
Wow.
So to me, at some point, I'm just looking around saying, man, I don't really understand why you're not doing something to get your quarterback in rhythm. So part of this is on Geno. He's played in this league a long time. I think he'll be okay. But part of this is also on Chip Kelly. And, you know, and here you sit. You're 1-3. We sit here as a fan base, 1-3, about to take on a Colts team that I think is one of the best in the AFC. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. My preseason prediction I got roasted for at Yahoo was that Daniel Jones would be comeback player of the year and the Colts would win their division. So I'm not surprised by what Indy's doing. They're better than the Raiders. They're going to beat the Raiders by double digits. So, you know, now we sit at 1-4, and it's like, how do you scrape something out of the rest of this season? That's why coming in, I thought it was probably a 7 or 8 win team, you know, and it just, it feels like that's going to be hard to get to if they can't clean up fast with these issues. But also, y'all look at the AFC. Like, just look at the AFC right now. The Bills are good. The Colts are good. The Chargers, we think, are good, right? Who else? Like, right now, you should go across the board. I mean, there aren't very many good teams in the AFC, so bad teams going to be in the playoffs, so nothing's lost yet.
Fitzy, you're the man to speak to this. By the time Bad Bunny's done performing at the halftime of the Super Bowl, are we going to have forgot about the seeming flirtation with Taylor Swift? What John and I were saying, and listen, I'm not this huge Taylor Swift guy, but I respect what she's done, who she is, and what she is to music. And the Goodell, frankly, not sort of burying it. He had said, well, we'll see. You know, he'd kind of left the door open, had me thinking as the outsider, all right, we're about to get Taylor Swift, and I was ready for it. And so when we got the Bad Bunny announcement, I said to John, well, this feels like, you know, it's kind of unfair to him. Feels like a little bit of a step down. Realize how worldly he is, but we're talking Taylor Swift. Are we all going to be happy with this halftime performance by the time it's done, or are we going to be saying, man, they should have got the deal done with Taylor?
I don't think Taylor was ever really in those conversations. I just think that Taylor and the NFL understand it's good for business when people are talking
about
it. They
were teasing
us. She still has nothing. Yeah, she has nothing to gain by doing the halftime show. If it's the best halftime show in history, it won't help her brand. And if it's anything less than the best halftime show in history, then Taylor Swift haters will use it as some sort of ammunition. So I don't think there's any gain for her. She also just did the biggest tour in the world over the last 2 years. Like, she's not going to sell a single extra ticket to a single show. Her fan base doesn't grow. Like, there's literally no gain other than we can all say we saw Taylor Swift through the halftime show. But for Bad Bunny, I mean, as I've told you guys before, you know, years ago when I sat down with the people that made these decisions, one of the things they stressed is, like, they want people that don't normally watch the Super Bowl, which is why Taylor makes some sense. But for Bad Bunny, you've got a global audience that doesn't always necessarily watch the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It'll be into it. I think it's going to be a huge numbers, especially on international audience. It is going to do huge numbers. I also think that, like I told you guys before, I said at the time, Usher makes great baby making music, not great halftime music. Like, I just, Bad Bunny's tempos, Bad Bunny's feel, like, it's a vibe. It's a thing. I just don't know that it's a halftime energy. Like, I think it's going to be one of those. I just, at my core, believe that at halftime, we don't want to snuggle up on the couch and we don't want sexy music to dance to. We want something that makes you want to pour a bunch of pickleback shots and get weird, right? Like, so I think it's going to be a huge numbers and fans are going to love it of Bad Bunny. I just don't think it's going to be this electric. I hope I'm wrong. I just don't think it's going to be this electric pick-me-up moment.
Yeah. Fitz, you're the best, man. Always great to catch up.
Great talking
Thank
to you,
my
brother.
Friend.
Love you, boys. Missed you.
Yes, sir.
Missed you, too.
Likewise. Thank you, man. It's Jason Fitz.
Thanks, boys.
From Yahoo Sports. Always great to catch up with our friend Fitz. We'll come back, wrap this up on a Tuesday. Jason and John, 90.9 FM, ESPN. Our friend Jeff Calkins has a fantastic piece up at the Daily, Memphian about Larry Ray. In his life, in his career. Of course, Larry passed over the weekend at the age of 82. And his service will be Thursday at Bartlett Hills Baptist Church. And visitation for non-family members will begin at 10:30 for Larry Ray. And I thought he captured very well. I mean, Larry Ray covered preps for 21 years before he moved to the outdoors. And, of course, he was doing the outdoor show here on 790 for quite a while. Even in last month, he had a show on August the 30th. So a great professional and great passion did Larry Ray have for the outdoors. You should definitely read this piece up at dailymemphian.com. Just to get you updated here, we do have a tie break in the Guardians game. It is 2-1.
Okay.
Tigers. So there you go.
All right.
Mid-7th. We're going to the bottom of the 7th. Sacrifice bunt, you know. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do in a playoff game. So
make way for the 2 o'clock start of Cubs Padres.
Yeah, are you going to be locked into it? No. You don't think you'll be watching it?
We got a lot to do. We got our own service on Friday, as you know, for Les. A lot of services. Got Myron Lowry on Saturday. Got Larry Ray. And I would just add to what you said. That dude, and I'm not just saying this because of the words fitting, but he was a ray of sunshine anywhere he walked, whether it was covering preps for the 21 years, whether it was outdoors, and he would shine that ray, right, on you, on whatever he was covering. It was his enthusiasm, his love, man, that he just was always projecting that, I don't know, man. They don't make them like Larry Ray. You know, a reminder, hey, have fun while you're working, especially if you're doing something that you're passionate about.
Yep.
Like he was a living testament every single day that he was alive. And so we're obviously praying for his family, the Lowry family as well, for their loss. We've lost some great ones.
We have.
Here recently.
Been a tough couple
and,
weeks.
And we'll continue to be as we memorialize them with these services. But just wanted to say that those two always made me smile. Larry Ray, and just a great, great man. Another man that loved Memphis and Memphis' stories, man, and did a lot to make sure that we knew them.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my experience with the outdoors was I went hunting once with a BB gun, duck hunting once with a BB gun, but Larry still had me on his outdoor show.
You know, he could still work with you.
He wanted me to make an appearance, and I did. I can't remember which anniversary it was, but it was one of them. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Jason Fitz for joining us. Thanks to Jessica Benson as well. Jeffrey and Company up next. Don't miss it. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.